All right, folks, welcome. So hopefully you're in the right place, because this is what we're doing here, Faithify, Mobilizing Networks for Rapid Response. My name is Hillary Allen. I'm one of the Faithify staff, also on the New England Regional Field staff. Good to see you all. Thanks for choosing to be with us. So I know you all were in rooms like this yesterday, so we want to invite you, even though it's a little solemn in here, to express yourself freely today. So feel free to say amen a couple times if you hear something you like. We like sparkler fingers. Basically, Faithify tries to be as fun as possible, so don't feel like you need to sit still and stiff the whole time. Express yourself. We'd love to hear from you. Also just want to see who's here. So who's already heard of Faithify? All right. And some of you here to learn a little bit more, want to know what's up? Cool. Has anybody funded a campaign on Faithify already? Are you a Faithifier? All right. Hopefully we'll convince you before the afternoon is up. Anybody run a campaign on Faithify? All right. So Reverend Karen is going to be speaking to us about that. So luckily we'll be able to hear from more. So these are my friends here today, Reverend Karen Van Fossen from the Bismarck-Mandan UU congregation, who's going to be talking about UU presence with Standing Rock. I'm sure that's why most of you are here today. That's why I'm here. And then Halcyon Westall, who's our project manager for Faithify. Basically, if you want to do anything on Faithify, Halcyon can help you. She's the person behind the website at this point. So you'll be hearing from both of them in just a moment. Just to give you a sense of what we're going to do today, in a moment, Reverend Karen's going to lead us in prayer. And then we are going to have a conversation, asking some questions of Reverend Karen to hear what her experience on Faithify was like. And then have a few questions for you all to talk with each other. Then we'll get into some nitty-gritty about how the site really works. For those of you who like those kind of technical, logistical things, we'll get to that. And then have a little more time for questions from you all if we haven't touched on something that you want to hear about. So, sound good? All right, let's do this.
Hey. Well, my name is Karen Van Fossen, and it's really an honor to be with you. I hail from North Dakota, which is a semi-arid environment, and my hair has never been so excited to be alive. It's really good to be here. I invite you, as you're willing and able, to stand in body or spirit and join me in prayer, meditation, focus, intention. As we feel our feet on holy ground and our hearts beating with life and our minds alive and our breath coming in and out and being shared in this room, in this place and all places, we give great thanks for the opportunity to be together, to struggle together and celebrate together. We give thanks for all who came before and all who will follow. And may we come together in a spirit of solidarity and justice and purpose and even love together this afternoon. Amen and blessed be.
Give you a sense of where we're going in our conversations. It was wonderful to work with Reverend Karen. It was great to work with you and think about this workshop, and we realized that there were some themes that emerged, and these are what we're going to touch on in our conversations this afternoon. This idea of being able to go slow first, and then you can move fast. that crowdfunding uses all the same rules as healthy congregational life. And I love that you said this, that when one congregation is called, we are all called. So listen for when those come up later. We have a bunch of images from Standing Rock that we'll be putting up as we go along. I apologize for the lines there. That was a technical projector issue. And we wanted to have some time just to be conversational with Reverend Karen and hear about what was going on in your area, in your partnership, and then what brought you into leading the Faithify campaign. And through that conversation, we'll hear about what made it successful, what made you able to move so quickly into this justice work and fund it so successfully. So that's really my first question about it, is how you began your relationship with the water protectors at Standing Rock.
Water is life. I began my relationship with the water protector movement thanks to somebody who just came in the room a few moments ago named Rania Hoblett. Please feel free to turn around. She is waving. And I'm very happy you're here, Rania. So we have a story that we like to tell. It was in, we think, April. I'm trying to get this cord to move so I can see you back there, Rania. we think it was April of last year. We're not sure because we didn't know that there would be so many markers in time to follow that one. We just were doing what was at hand. And Rania, probably in April, came forward to the front of our sanctuary and lit a candle. Probably a combination of joy and sorrow it was, if I'm remembering. And said, you know, there's a camp to stop a pipeline. Maybe you heard about the pipeline. I don't even know if... We were hardly hearing anything about that at that time, even very, very, very locally. So this was about a year and a half ago. And she said, so it's a new camp, and it's there, it's at Standing Rock, and it's to resist the pipeline and to support the water and love the water and protect the water. And since it's a camp, they need things like you need at camp. So we were thinking of visual aids, and one of them would be a lot of toilet paper. So it was a candle about toilet paper and other paper products that you need for camp. And that was literally how it began. And I happened to be given this book of matches that say Faithify on them as I was on my way up here. And there are many sparks. And I'm very grateful for the way that Faithify has magnified that spark. And we'll get to that.
So it sounds like it's... You weren't exactly sure what was going to happen at the beginning, of how big it would become and how much a part of the central mission of your congregation. At first, it sounds very organic.
Yes, extremely organic. So shortly after that, so we were gathering supplies and people, I would see people slipping money into Rania's hand. And we'd go to the grocery store and get food as we were on our way to camp. And then there became a need for a local drop-off spot for supplies in Bismarck Mandan that could be taken to camp. At that point, the drive to camp was about 45 minutes. Eventually, that road and bridge were shut down. And I won't dwell on that, but I could for the rest of this time. I just won't dwell on that part. And then we had to go around and it took about an hour and a half. But we would go to the grocery store and anyway, we became the local. We were the entity, the sort of public entity in Bismarck Mandan that was willing to be a drop-off spot for supplies to take to camp that could have been assigned to us. Of what was to come, but still then we didn't quite get it, I don't think, Rania, what was coming yet. No.
And so you know that this is getting bigger, and you're involved with folks at the camp. I don't know if this is close enough. A little closer? Oh, man, this mic really wants you to eat the mic. Sorry about that. And so at some point, the life of the congregation really became quite intertwined. And so what was it like for your congregation to step into this in a new way, to have it be a focus of your congregation's work and mission?
What we used to say all the time is, because people would notice how much time and energy we were spending, and we would say, we receive far more than we could even begin to give, and that continues to be our experience. I do remember one particular meeting of some of the leaders in our congregation, and I had asked that meeting to be called, and I said, things are getting a lot harder than we anticipated. It's getting pretty tough. And I know I'm all in, and I can be all in on my own if need be. Be really great if we're all in together. What do you think? And it was unanimous in that meeting. The board was unanimous. The congregation was not entirely unanimous. And it became the heart of our spiritual lives, I would say. Oh, there's Rania. That's a picture from the Bismarck Tribune.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Slightly louder would be good.
Okay, from everybody? Including me? All right.
I do tend to be a little soft-spoken, so I'll try and project a bit more. So in your story, I know that at some point the world started to pay more attention. The world noticed what was happening, and it became bigger than your immediate community, and there was a lot of press. And talk about that a little bit, about that change from being something close community to broader.
Well, just a few years ago, there was a great big article that was extremely controversial locally in the National Geographic that essentially declared all of North Dakota an elaborate ghost town. And all the pictures were of snow and buildings that you couldn't live in or even safely touch anymore. And suddenly, we were perched at, well, the way I used to say it all the time was, Standing Rock is the center of the world right now. And we have the honor of being perched at the edge of the center of the world.
Do you feel like your congregation could have said no in that moment?
I don't think we could have justified our existence as a congregation if we would have said no. And I don't think we could have said no. There was no to be said. But in that time and in that place, I can't think of anything more important to be doing and being about as people who understand ourselves as church.
So in your story, I'm hearing that you had this relationship with the camp and with the water protectors that goes way back. And then with the extra visibility and energy of the protests, you were able to, you made the choice to devote more energy of the congregation. What did it look like when you started to do, I don't know if it's more things, different things. How did you figure out what the things were that were yours to do? And by yours, I mean the congregation, uh-huh. Not you personally.
Yeah. I have noticed a difference. There were many things that became ours to do because they were not otherwise being done. which was a direct consequence, I would say, of colonialism and racism in our local community. So we found ourselves doing emergency management, which we certainly weren't trained in doing. But we, in our homes and in our church home, we housed, I just stopped counting at about 250 water protectors. We picked people up from jail. We moved people around. We took supplies. You probably remember the very challenging night of November 20th when the water cannons were opened up in the winter. That was solid winter on water protectors. We were going to the hospital and picking people up. We did a lot of that kind of really work that required our bodies and our physical places. It was very physical. And in fact, when we would first go to camp, we really weren't, our intention never was to draw attention to ourselves. And so we would go, and one of my favorite stories to tell is there were so many people there, so many people eating, that I've never before gotten a blister on my thumb from serving so many people. It also says something about the heaviness of the rice, which was really good. There were many, many people, but we would go and mostly we would spend time serving or cooking or praying at the fire. And one day we were at a community meeting at camp, and some local people from camp said, this was probably in August, well, maybe September, of all the people in the whole world who ought to be able to understand what we're about, that we're about prayer and we're about spirit, it should be people of faith. Where are the faith communities of Bismarck Mandan? So our little group that was there, we started whispering, and for the first time I gave voice in that space, and I said, we've been in the kitchen and we're here. And that began our interfaith collaboration, which led to an event that many of you may have attended, Chief Arville Looking Horse's Call to Interfaith Prayer in December. Lots of interfaith events following.
Stay there. Did you have a question that's parking? I see you looking over at me. No, okay. It's just in my mind. It was what you just touched on regarding interfaith community and this work. And I remember from our previous conversations that that was a big piece that you were able to do outside of camp, is be a faith community in support where maybe the local community was not. Yes.
The legal collectives have done studies of the Bismarck Mandan population, primarily in order to understand what jury configurations are likely to look like. You may know that about 800 people were arrested as water protectors. So knowing what a local jury will, how that will be configured is pretty important. And it's about 75% to 85% of Bismarck Mandan people who believe that water protectors are already guilty before they come into the courtroom. That's where we live. And, you know, that also leaves quite a lot of people who actually... whose hearts are open and spirits have been enlivened. And Bismarck Mandan has never been so great, I'll say that. It's never been so livable.
Yeah. What do you feel like has changed that's made it more livable?
So there are plenty of jokes about North Dakota that it's not a particularly necessarily interesting place, that mainstream white culture in Bismarck is not very enlivening. And you may have heard that rumor. And my sense is that life is actually extremely fascinating inherently. So when our cultures don't express that, they're working really hard to express something different. And so the things that were not being said, all that was being pushed down, is now coming up. And as Native friends and colleagues of mine, and other people of color, but especially Native friends and colleagues locally have said, it's not that we feel any less safe or any less at home. It's that now white people are really noticing. And we're actually talking about it, which is the way we can make change.
That's so powerful. We haven't even talked about your Faithify campaign. I just realized I should probably bring it up. So you, as I understand, you're busy, you're engaged with the camps, you're working with your partners, you're saying, here we are, send us, and then you reach out to some helpers, yes?
Yes. So we were realizing that this was, we were in for the long haul, and there was much to be done, and many ways that communities of faith were called upon to show up, especially locally. I'm a new minister, and I learned how to pray, to find voice to give prayer publicly often, because I would often be the only identifiable faith leader from a non-Native, predominantly, a non-Native faith leader. And so we realized that this was our life, and this was our work, and we reached out to the Mid-America region, actually, and said, we're a small church serving a very wide area. Can you help us at all? And in the first sentence, I think the word faithify was spoken.
And so the Mid-America Congregational Life staff said yes, that they could find a way to help. And I believe there also you had Tandy Rogers,
yes,
who facilitated your campaign. That's how when I started to get involved.
Yes, so we had essentially an advocate, which I, a person who held the campaign for us and believed in us, and that was very, very sustaining for us. And as we were reflecting on this, I realized that in many ways Faithify is about, you know, it's about raising money, and there are nuts and bolts of that. It's also a profound faith expression that we are in this together, and it was a way that UU people and other people and congregations around the country expressed that they are with us. And that's a profound faith statement, that people were in solidarity with us being in solidarity.
As I get to work with authors of campaigns, right now we have 243 different campaigns that have been on the site. So I've worked with a lot of authors. And one of the joys of your campaign, Karen, was that you did have help with the crafting of your campaign description and the story of it. And I think that was beautiful and also helped folks who had heard a little bit in the news about Standing Rock and about the water protectors. But to understand how it connected to Unitarian Universalism was motivating for your funders, to the tune of, you know, almost twice the goal was raised, which is compelling.
It was a huge honor.
Yeah. We do have resources for folks around crafting a story, from how Tandy gave us some of the process she used with you around developing that. Do you recall when you emailed or spoke to her about developing that story?
I have no idea.
I love it. It was so busy at that moment. Yeah. Well, there was a lot going on for you. For sure. It's
you can jump up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Do you want this? Any questions?
Well, I do want to just share that we do have this on our websites. We did contact Tandy and asked for some of the questions she used in that process. And these are what you can use with your team when you are starting your Faithify project and want to develop the ask. These are on the website. I don't know if you'll be able to use the QR code, but it's, we have. Faithify.org is the website. Could you hand me that one, please? I have a couple of paper copies here. I will have the address for this document in a couple of moments. I just have to look it up because I don't have it memorized.
Could you clarify your question, please?
Faithify existed. Faithify started in June 2014, and it's the crowdfunding website for Unitarian Universalist Ministries. And the folks at the Mid-America region and Reverend Tandy Rogers were familiar with Faithify as a source of funding and for something that you can use really quickly to raise money, much like if you're familiar with crowdfunding like GoFundMe or Kickstarter, exact same idea. And so it really was the right tool at that moment to help them raise the money quickly.
We do
have some time where we're gonna go into the technical stuff, not to put you off, but I think we'll get there, and if we don't, come back to me with that one.
Okay, so remember I told you we're gonna let you talk to each other. Part of our thinking for this workshop, and thank you Reverend Karen and Halcyon for leading us through that story, is we were afraid that as you were listening to this amazing story, that you would maybe say to yourself, well, I don't have a standing rock in my backyard. You know, how could I have this tremendous opportunity just land on my doorstep? So we want to give you a chance to talk about what you do have going on in your community, and this could be within your congregation, but hopefully also sort of, you know, outside the walls of your congregation. What's going on? What partnerships exist that you could develop a relationship even deeper, that you could be faithifying that partnership? So I just invite you to turn to somebody, maybe somebody you already know, but maybe somebody new, and think about one or two justice issues in your community already, and maybe again an existing partnership that you have or a partnership that you could grow deeper so that you could faithify that relationship. So we'll give you about 6 minutes. I'll give you a halfway point. We're almost done. Okay, so that's your halfway point. You got about 3 more minutes. All right, let's come back. Thanks for talking with each other. So I want to give you a couple more questions to talk with each other about. And you've heard us already say yes and no, so we want to dig into that a little bit more. So you heard Reverend Karen just a moment ago say that it would be great if we were all in this together. So really saying yes as a community and as a congregation. But we also know, as Faithify staff, that no is a word that we also use a lot in our congregations, particularly when we're talking about money. We say we don't have any money for that, right? So we want you to just play with these voices. When are you all saying yes to each other? When are you encouraging each other with your ideas, even maybe the partnerships you just talked about? But also talk about those little no voices you might be hearing. Again, well, we don't have a Standing Rock on our backyard, or we don't have any existing partnerships, or we have no money. So just talk again with each other. When are you hearing those yes voices, and when are you hearing those no voices? So take about 3 more minutes. You're at your halfway point for conversation. 3 more minutes.
It delights us that there's so much fruitful conversation in the room. We need our chime. Let's come back together. All right. Thank you, everybody. It's kind of like when they say, you know, greet your neighbor in the service, right? It's like, how do we come back together? Perhaps during question and answer time, we'll get to hear a little bit about what you were talking about, because we're sitting up here being really curious, because everybody's got so much to say, which is wonderful. A couple of concrete and technical things. I put the link for the questions that were up on the screen, that's in the GA app in the discussion for this workshop right now. So you have the link for that. If you go in the GA app, do you have that on your phone? If you go for this workshop, there's a channel. It's there. So you'll see it there. So you have it. Or you can come by the Faithify booth in the UUA Expressway. We have a couple of paper copies, and also I can make sure it's a funny looking link. It's not something real cute that I can just say, you know, www.blahblah. So that is there for you. A couple of people were wondering about how Faithify works. So we'll do a really short rundown of how the site works. It is a crowdfunding website. And to date, that we have raised $938,000 for different UU ministries. So it's phenomenal. I'm sorry? Since June 2014, so we just finished up a third year. It was launched in Providence, GA. And about how the site works, it's online. So all of the forms and the how-to of how to put up a campaign is there at faithify.org. If you click on how to post a campaign, we have quite a bit of information about how to develop your campaign. We have Faithify University, which is a series of free short videos that talk about the how-tos of crowdfunding, how to promote your campaign, and how to develop your description and things like that. And then you have a real live person at the other end of the contact form, that's me, for when you're like, oh, this didn't work like I thought it would, or gee, how do we figure out our goal? Things like that, you get a real person to talk to, a Unitarian Universalist, so I understand a lot of the programs that you're interested in and the lens that you might be looking at them. So one question we had already was about how much it costs to list a campaign on Faithify. Faithify has no fee at all for listing your campaign on our site. Every campaign has to meet a couple of very important criteria. It has to claim Unitarian Universalism, and it has to be claimed by Unitarian Universalism. Those are the most important criteria for our site. It has to be accountable, too. We'll touch on that in a little bit. Now, the fee that there is our payment processor, which is Stripe. Because all of the pledges are done with credit cards, there has to be somebody who turns those credit cards into money in your bank account. So that's Stripe, and they charge 2.9% plus 30 cents per transaction. So that's the cost. So you have to figure that in when you're making your goal. There's gonna be a little bit less that ends up in your bank account because that 2.9% is taken out of each pledge plus the 30 cents. About technical stuff?
About what you were just saying, what it takes to qualify to get your support. You said UU, but the list of questions says it has to be a justice campaign. So I'm wondering what is not so justice, like we're interested in.
Right. This would be
menstrual pad support of girls in Africa. Is mm-hmm. that justice? Or
so I'm going to... So the question was about, do all of the campaigns on Faithify have to be justice campaigns, and how do we define justice campaigns? No, not all campaigns on Faithify have to be justice campaigns. We have building repairs and accessibility ramps built, travel for different reasons. The pamphlet is a podcast, a history podcast, fabulous. All kinds of different projects can be on there. But this workshop, because we're at a Justice GA, this workshop is how to mobilize funds for your justice ministries. And that is primarily defined by your congregation or organization, right? That's how you're gonna figure out how it ties into Unitarian Universalism if you have a justice campaign. That's really broad, right? I see another hand. Is it about technical stuff? Lay it on me.
So requesting funding from only people who would be Unitarian faith or anyone?
The question was who is gonna be funding these campaigns? Who's the ask to? The world is your answer. Anybody who has access to the internet can get to this site and could fund your campaign. That's one of the powerful pieces of Faithify, is you're getting beyond your community that knows you. And we have, what are we up to now? Are we up to 8,000 Faithifiers? Yeah, who have pledged on the site. So it can go as far as the internet.
So, I just want to clarify, yeah. Faithify doesn't have any money.
So when you're posting your campaign on the site, you're asking for funds from your communities, your extended networks. We are not a funder. We are just the website. So we are the place you go to find the funders, but we don't distribute any funds. So you don't really get money from Faithify. So when Halcyon says $940,000, that's money that's just passed through our website. We're really the conduit. You all are generating the excitement and the interest and finding the funders. All right, I see a couple more hands. We do have some other points we want to get to with Reverend Karen, so I'll ask you all to be brief, and then we'll have more time for questions.
Yeah. Go ahead.
How do you, you have 8,000 people that have given through Faithify over the last 3 years, but let's say my project gets on your site, do you automatically contact all 8,000 of those people and say, Shirley has this great project you should hear about?
No, so the question is about how do people find out about the site? About the campaign, how is it publicized? The bulk of the work on publicizing your campaign is done by you. We have a newsletter that we put out with new projects. If a project is ending soon, we'll put out a post about that. We will retweet and share things that you put up on social media, but really you are generating the energy and the sharing around your campaign. We are the platform. And we have people who come to Faithify and browse what's there. That is, fewer of our funders are people who go to the site and just check out what there is. We do have our super users who fund, 20 campaigns so far or whatever. Then they're there because they are devoted to Faithify and want to see what's up there. But mostly campaigns are funded by shares and likes and getting you going out to communities and asking people to share your campaign with other people in their networks. Last one before we move on.
So when I get my project up on the website, is it going to be like a little square? Is there going to be a separate page that I can have a link for? Or is the link to only the one page?
Yep. So we're going to have a screenshot of that, and you'll see a little bit of what it looks like. But if you go to www.faithify.org, you can see the home page has a little grid of different campaigns with a short description and the goal and when they're going to end. And then if you click on the picture or the box for that campaign, it takes you to its own campaign page, and that has a much longer description and more images. You can put a video up there, and updates, and a list of your funders. All right.
Can you say wonderfully?
Yay, thank you. Wonderful. I love that feedback. Something's working.
The fire one was not. The new one is very fun.
Which is why we did a new one. I love hearing that something's working on the new site. So we'll go relatively briefly through some of these other slides. We wanted to touch on, especially for Justice Ministry, in Reverend Karen's story, you heard about that how did they get into this work, how did they build the partnership with the water protectors and the camp, and some of that, this slide we had before about going slow first and then you can move fast. This is something we've really learned, especially with justice campaigns, to build relationships before you know where they're gonna go, right? And I'm going to ask Hillary and Reverend Karen to jump in when they feel moved to add illustrations to this. But in the story, we heard that it came organically out of the motivation of the congregation before it became national news, before it became something really large. And having that connection to their partners made other things flow. Hillary, will you talk to the sweet spot? I feel like I've been talking a long time.
Oh, that's okay. So up on the screen here, and again, we're going to share these slides with you, is the sweet spot. This comes out of the New England region. This is a tool that we use a lot, and we encourage you to use it, but basically having you think about whether or not something you're about to engage in is actually in your sweet spot. So we have a few different criteria. Competency or giftedness, are you actually good at this? Do you have the will to do it? Might it make an impact? We heard about that last night at the service of the Living Tradition. Do
do you have capacity, money, resources, these kind of things? Usually in congregations, we start with capacity, and if we can't find the money for it, we don't do it. But there's other things here to consider the sweet spot. And then, of course, mission. And basically, the way that you use this tool is you sort of rank, let's say for mission, we think it's really close to the center of our mission. So you move up that axis, make a little dot there. So you're trying to get close there into the center. Sometimes you don't have a lot of will to do something, but maybe you have a lot of idea that it'll have an impact. This just helps you be able to see it on paper. You know, where is this in relationship to our sweet spot? If you get really high rankings for all five of these criteria, you have some pretty good data that this is maybe something you should do. So we commend this tool to you all. Again, we use it a lot.
Just keep going.
How about that? All right, so we've heard so much about this GA already, but relationships with partners, obviously we've talked a lot about it with Black Lives of UU. You know, moving at the speed of trust, that's what the Black Lives Matter movement talks about. You know, slowing down, taking time to really be sure that you're moving in sync and not taking over. We heard directly from Lena Gardner, you know, I need you to work with me but not take over. Obviously, Reverend Karen can speak a lot to this. Working with indigenous populations and communities in North Dakota, you know, how can we support what's happening? How can we be partners? But not centering ourselves, particularly those of us who are white.
Do you want to say more about that?
Well, I've come to understand that sometimes we can be reluctant to engage a campaign like this because it can be embarrassing or should we draw that much attention to what we're doing? And my response to that is, no matter who we are, in a way, it's very deeply about us and has nothing to do with us. And in this context, the Faithify campaign was a powerful way that Unitarian Universalists around the world gave us spiritual care. It was a way that people let us know they were with us. And they saw us, and they saw the work, and they saw water protectors, and they were present with us in this way. And it was an honor to be in the position to ask for what we needed in order to do what we felt called to do.
So again, these are some of the technical things that will save you time because the thing is happening. It's happening in your community. You have figured out that this is the justice work that is important for your congregation and you want to just jump right in. So these things will help you. When you go to Faithify and you want to set up your campaign, we have found it saves you time if you set up the account in your congregation's name, not your personal name, not the board president's name, not the DRE's name. Then you can have other campaigns on your personal things. So keep one for your congregation. Connect to Stripe. Stripe is our payment processor, as I mentioned before. So you want to set up an account in Stripe, and that's how you get your money once we've processed the campaign. So you want to get that done ahead of time so that your money gets to you quickly.
It's similar to PayPal?
It's similar to PayPal, yes. Yep, or WePay, that's the one we used to use on our old site. The nice thing about Stripe, though, is that Stripe is accepted in many, many countries around the world. It used to be that Faithify was limited to U.S. campaigns. And if we had an international campaign, it needed a partner with a U.S. bank account. But now Stripe is in Canada and Australia and Europe, India. And so those folks, UU organizations or partners in those different countries can set up their own independent Faithify campaign. Another thing that's going to save you a lot of time is to take lots of photos. We saw a few of the beautiful images from Standing Rock in the camp and from the Bismarck Mandan congregation. Being able to update people as you go, Our campaigns are 15 days or 30 days, 45 days or 60 days, right? So that's not a ton of time to keep the energy going for your campaign. And if you have lots of great images and you're able to tell people, here's what's happening, here's how we're working on this right now, here's some of our partners, and keep that energy and momentum going for your campaign.
Yeah, and not just group shots. My favorite photo of them from Bismarck Fandon is when they're walking out of the congregation carrying the toilet paper and all the things, right? Because it's memorable and it shows what they were actually doing. So we really wanted to emphasize, luckily I serve as congregational life staff as well, so I know this to be true, but crowdfunding uses all the same parts of healthy congregational life. So being collaborative, communicating with each other, checking in with each other, knowing who to ask about things that you encounter. So the more you all know each other as a congregation and have built trust over time, the easier it will be for you to run a crowdfunding campaign. You can say to yourself, oh, I need to get this done. I need to go talk to Dan because he's the guy who always knows about this thing. Or these are the people in our midst who are photographers. We really need to activate them consistently to be capturing all these things that we're doing so that we can share with our Faithify funders all the things that have been happening with this campaign.
When you say share with the Faithify funders, do they automatically get messaging from the site? Do they also get information on whether it succeeded or failed? And do they get any kind of something for the tax return because this was a, tax-deductible gift?
Such great question. So what sort of communication happens with funders and folks who are paying attention to your campaign? It totally depends on what you're doing. So if you want to send them tax letters, which we really recommend that you do, that comes from you as the campaign owner. Updates come from you as the campaign owner. Success, where you are in your progress. If you've got $100 left, you need to be reminding your folks that you've got $100 to go towards your goal. We only do very, very basic communication. Again, we're trying to promote the site. You need to promote your campaigns. So the question is about who you can communicate with. So if you're communicating through your campaign, it's to funders who have already, well, it's basically anybody who's looking at your campaign page on Faithify.
Anyone who has looked at it.
Anyone who is looking at it. So it's a public post. It's an update post.
So you don't send an email to people. We update our page, and we have to, again, drive the people to go look at the page.
Exactly. So we're using a separate email communication with everyone who's ever used Faithify. We reserve the right to communicate with those folks about the site. But basically, the way we feel is that they are not our funders. They're not our donors. They're yours because they have given to individual campaigns on the site. This is, I think, the biggest stretch of Faithify is around using social media, using photographs. A lot of people when we first started said this will never work because we can't make a video. Of course, now people have figured out how to do that. We feel like in order for people to know Unitarian Universalism is in the world, we need to learn these skills. So there's a reason we ask you to be loud and to be public is because we think that would help the faith at large. There's some work to it.
I will say, with the new website, there is the ability to integrate a MailChimp list to if you have a MailChimp account, and it will populate a list of your funders in your MailChimp. So you will have that base if you want to contact people who have already pledged. That would be there for you. Okay. Knowing that, we've talked a little bit about accountability with partners.
I was going to ask Reverend Karen if you would talk a little bit about risk. So again, that was one of our core ideas in starting Faithify. You heard her earlier basically hearken to our name. We had a lot of different things we could call the site, and we intentionally chose to call it Faithify because we thought it had this dimension of faithfulness to it, to really step out and take risks. And Standing Rock folks have done that, and you all have done that. So I wondered if you could speak a little bit about what it's like to take risk in public out loud.
Well, particularly speaking to Faithify and the risk of asking for support and monetary support for something that matters to us, the way that I sort of mitigate that risk and understand that risk is that it's an honor to be asked to do good work, and it's an honor to be asked to support good work that is happening. And so when we ask, we honor the people that we ask, because we know what is needed to do the good work that the world calls us to.
I'm kind of curious about, you said something about UU has to claim the project, as well as, if I'm getting this right, it has to be a congregation has to endorse the project. I'm not entirely clear with all this sort of ownership model stuff going on.
So that was actually an intentional choice, and so the language we use is claim Unitarian Universalism and be claimed by. So it's a reciprocal relationship. And the reason we did that essentially is because we didn't want to say a congregation needed to endorse every campaign, because some projects and campaigns don't emerge from congregations. So we wanted it to be able to be broader than that. If your congregation is supporting what you're doing, that satisfies being claimed by pretty well. We also just did this because we knew the site would be a UU crowdfunding site. So how do you demonstrate your relationship with the larger movement? So that's why we specifically ask you to answer these questions, because that says it's a UU campaign.
So you've raised $900,000, and I can only look at what's up there now. Can you give us an idea of the best things that have worked besides Standing Rock? Because Standing Rock is genuinely unique. And what percent of that 900,000 was Standing Rock?
That's such an interesting question. Reverend Karen's campaign is still the largest amount raised for a single campaign, but it's not the only quite large campaign we've had. Right now, there's one up that's almost finished, and its goal is 15,000. We've had several over 10,000. Overall, for the site, the success rate of campaigns is 79% success, which is phenomenal for a crowdfunding website. You know, Kickstarter is in the 30s. So especially justice and service campaigns is in the 90s, 95%. I think it's 96% of the justice and service campaigns have been successful, because this is stuff that's really important to Unitarian Universalists. This is how we act our values in the world. Forgotten the rest of the question. Help me out.
Well, just to say that best basically means folks who have worked to get people to support it. I think we can safely say that every single one of the campaigns that's been unsuccessful is what I like to call set it and forget it. So they posted the campaign and then they never went back and never told anyone it was there. And so the days just dwindled away and there was no money. Again, we have a really high success rate. The success rate comes in part, Reverend Karen just reminded me, we are an all or nothing site. So you have to raise your goal amount or you don't get any of the funds. All right, like everybody take a breath, okay? We did that intentionally again because we think it's more faithful. So I was just looking downstairs at our Faithify table in the expressway. We have an example of Channing's monument, which is recently being restored through Faithify funds, or Faithify campaign. And, you know, if they had only raised $200, you know, would they have just polished a corner of the monument? I don't really know what would have happened. But really, we think it's more faithful to say, this is the total amount that we need. Anything we raise over that is just, you know, gravy. But we can't actually sort of do this project without this low threshold amount. We're glad to work with you to figure out what's realistic for you. We also have a lot of campaigns that have run, so we can talk to you about what might be reasonable. You also know your base and your people better than we do, so you can say, you know, what's enough. But you do have to reach that amount in order to get any of the funding. So you do want to be realistic, but also ambitious.
The question was, what happens to the pledges if you don't make your entire goal? No pledges are processed until the campaign ends and successfully. So those pledges never get processed. They never get charged on their credit cards.
Yeah. Hi. We're looking at supplementing a building fund. We have just moved out of our former space and we're kind of temporarily plopping, but we're building a new building. And so we were looking at a higher level than $15,000. Is that still possible to do? I mean, for example, say we wanted $50,000.
Well, there's no limit to how much okay. your goal can be. What do we want to say about that? It's like any capital campaign. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of work to raise a lot of money. Say more?
I think you could also think about breaking it off into chunks. So say start with 15 just to see how you do. A staircase or something. I would like break off a piece of the project and then see how you do with that amount. There's no limit to what you can post on Faithify. So if you have success with that 15 and you want to come back and do another 15, okay. That's totally fine. The thing to keep in mind is how much can you tap your people and your networks before they sort of burn out. I mean, we know donor fatigue is an issue no matter what the campaign is.
And we've just had a capital campaign.
Exactly.
But this was my charge at GA, was to come and go to this workshop specifically.
Well done.
We can also talk more down at the UUA Expressway, I think. I just want to check. Yeah, we're getting close on our time. So we'll just take one more question, but I will say that we do have people at the booth the whole time the exhibit hall's open, and we'd love to talk to you more about specific projects that you have going on.
I'm not quite one of your power users, but I give to many campaigns, and I was going to say two things. One, I think it would be great if you had an opt-in for people who want to be, who aren't a donor to a specific campaign yet, but would like to be reminded when something's close. I'm very busy. I don't get on all the time. There are certain things I look at and I think, maybe, maybe not, but I want to see them build. And then I'll go back and they'll have closed out just missing. And it's heartbreaking. Not terribly heartbreaking enough to make me look every day, but I appreciate that you don't hit all 8,000 of us every time, but we should have an ability to opt in when, you know, maybe it's when things are at 75% or something, just to try to increase that. The one with the building, you know, that's not something I've given to, but the times I've given is where it's around a justice issue, where it's around accessibility, where it's around opening to the Grotter community in some form. It's not having a fancier sanctuary. It's around people can't get into our sanctuary.
Thank you. So very generously, Reverend Karen has offered to close us out with another prayer. Yeah?
As you're willing and able, again, I invite you to stand in body or spirit. We go forward with honor to ask for what is needed for the good work that we do and are called into. We go with gratitude for a tradition that holds us and supports work that sometimes others can't even see, and yet they lend their hearts. We go forward with inspiration for what might be and who we might become together in faith. Amen. Blessed be.